Welcome back to the CTO Playbook, the podcast dedicated to helping CTOs excel. Ask a CTO which executive relationship matters most, and nearly all of us will name the CEO. Today's guest would send you to the CFO instead. Most of us step into this role believing the job is to be the strongest technologist in the building. The job turns out to be translation. And the language you least train for is the one that decides whether your work gets funded or not. That matters more this year than last. And across my coaching practice, the dominant feeling right now is fear about what AI is doing to the industry, and fear pushes leaders towards safe, short-term decisions. Our guest today is Anoop Tripathi, 32 years in technology, from writing firmware for telephone exchanges to his current role as CTO at Source Labs. He has built an engineering team from nothing to more than 100 people, and he is unusually honest about what he learned the year he had to make one smaller. He also makes a serious case for laziness, with Isaac Newton as his star witness. I'm your host, Adam Horner, CTO coach and founder of the CTO Playbook. Explore coaching, cohorts, and resources at thectoplaybook.com. Now let's meet Anoop and hear about his playbook. Anoop, thank you very much for joining me on the CTO Playbook. I've been looking forward to this because we had a conversation a few weeks ago and I sort of got this real sense of passion for you, you know, in terms of what it is you do and why you do it. And when we spoke about that, I couldn't stop thinking about the fact, you know, 32 years in and you're still describing yourself as a technologist at heart. So just tell us, me and the listeners, what is it that keeps that true to this day?
You know, for me, the technology has always been my passion and innovation as such. I always wanted to think about how we can basically automate things to the nth degree, right? And I think that has been my passion forever, like before. And that's what I think was the first job that moved me to US. And it's an interesting story even with that, right? Because that was a time when we had hardly any internet as such. And there was a job posting that came in the local newspaper. That's how it used to be things that time. And it was a company called US Robotics. And I was excited to join and work in the field of robotics because that's what it was about, automation, robots. Ended up being that there's a different kind of robotics they were doing. They were creating modems. But so my passion has always been in the tech field about being a constant learner and evolving in the field of how can we automate things? I think that comes a lot of it also from being a lazy person too, I guess, right? Laziness makes you automate more.
Yeah, I mean, and then laziness is one of those sort of paragons held up as a great attribute of an engineer, whether software or hardware. Just tell us a little bit about that. What do you think is sort of the great thing about laziness? I mean, you brought it up first. Let's talk about laziness as a great quality.
Oh, yes. Laziness is interesting. I don't know. Some people say, guys, you're promoting laziness on this podcast here. But if you think about it, like who would think about innovating a remote? Somebody who's really lazy, right? He doesn't want to get out from the couch and get up to the TV and turn on the button, right? Who does not want to get up from the bed and turn on the light switch, right? Who would create that kind of innovation? Creating scripts to do work on your computer, to those people who are automating stuff. Like I remember there's a time when I had a pretty long command to type every time to become a root on a machine, right? And then over time, those things started simplifying. But in those days, we had to write a command and I created a script around it. And the script actually, I did not create, like people senior to me in the organization that created that. And I saw it and I felt, you know, I'm typing too many letters. You want to invoke this script and a smaller one. So it became, and that became very popular after that in the, because everybody liked it, right? So those are kind of things I would say, even look at the smaller or the larger scale, right? It's laziness brings out a lot of innovation, right? Even if you want to think about it, maybe Newton was being lazy and just sitting under an apple tree and doing nothing, and that laziness helped think about an apple falling from the tree or something. I think if you, just like any quality, right, if you purpose it in the right direction, laziness can be a great thing for you. Yes.
I know. I think that's a very, very good distinction to make there, that steering laziness towards being useful, being productive is clearly the goal we want to aim for. I mean, so tell us a little bit about some of the times when you were lazy and it was not the right thing to do. And did you have any of those moments where you sort of thought, okay, I'm going to do this the quick way, I'm going to do this the lazy way, and you sort of realized later on, oh, that was a wrong decision?
Well, laziness, I would say now as a technologist and a leader, right? I think some of the things are very important to make sure that you're not lazy decision-making, especially if you think that you have somebody who's wrong for a job and in the wrong place, right? It's not that they're wrong people, but it's more about the job and the person is not a good match.
Mm-hmm.
Being lazy for whatever reason in making that call and is not a good either for the person or for the company, right? So decision-making, you need to be really, really fast about. Don't be lazy in making decisions. Don't be scared of making decisions, right? So that's one area I would say has been something that I've always felt like, you know, that is where laziness can hurt you, right? Same thing with tech debt, right? Being lazy about, you know, that's fine, we'll take care of it later. That really blows back because it ends up being a quality issue, and it's a debt that every feature delivery gets longer and longer. So it's a debt by 1,000 cuts, but if you don't deal with your tech debt in the organization.
Yeah, it's accumulating one, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I think that's something I've seen. Like there was a case where we were very lazy about upgrading our stack from a outdated programming language to a new one. And it always created so much burden on the organization, hiring a replacement became so hard, like because you're now looking for the niche talent. And maybe what I say, you're looking for that unicorn talent, which maybe doesn't even exist anymore, or like very hard to find kind of a thing. And if you had just gone and updated the tech, you would be opening up to hiring so many. And that hurt us, actually. That was a big opportunity cost that we faced because we just were kind of just patching up stuff out there.
Yeah, and I totally take your point about not being lazy when it comes to people, because it just doesn't work. You know, you need to put the effort into relationships, into people, into helping people out. And I think if you don't, I mean, I've seen several times, especially in my coaching, where that quickly boomerangs back to you and shows you where the mistakes are. So that's good to see that you've seen that reflected in the same way. And when it comes to sort of tech debt, I suppose laziness there is, it's not so much laziness really, it's sort of deferring decisions for too long, really, isn't it? And so therefore, it's really laziness around decision-making, I think, is what you're getting to there, yeah?
It could be a decision-making laziness, right? Or it could be sometimes in a fear of making a decision. But a lot of time, it's and again, it's also about explaining, for example, tech debt to your organization in the right way. For example, if you go ahead and tell your, let's say, CEO as a CTO, you know, our code has so much of tech debt and that is our problem. That's a very classic thing a CEO always hears from every, right? It's not going to resonate, right? You have to go ahead and frame that problem to your CEO in terms of numbers. Instead of saying that, you know, we have a tech debt in the organization and that is causing this kind of quality issues. It's causing an availability problem, or it's causing this much delay in hiring people and filling people in when there's a replacement needed, or it's causing X thing on our delivery velocity, right? So you got to frame it in a way, and then people will understand what a tech debt is, as opposed to, oh, we got too much tech. We got a dated Python stack or something, or a PHP stack. That's not going to help frame the conversation, and you'll get a focus on it, right? You got to always translate it into a business outcome related issue as such.
And, you know, and I think that's something that almost all of our listeners are going to resonate with, is those transitions. Because, I mean, I think something that's clear from my conversations with you is that you've been through a lot of transitions on the technology, on the business, and as well on the hardware side as well. So I'd love to understand a little bit about some of those transitions that didn't go the way you planned. Can you tell us about some of those?
So there was one that we were trying to transition from a chassis-based system to a rack-mountable system, right? And in that case, what we felt was the density that we are going to go for in the rack-mountable systems will be higher than the chassis-based system. The amount of time it took us to get the product out, the industry had exploded. The internet need was so much that everybody needed so much density that that product became obsolete, and the chassis, like even the enterprises wanted the density of even the next level of density in the chassis based product. So,
right.
And what happened in this case, we missed the buck, and then obviously competition took us and by surprise, and by staying focused on focusing on the scale and the growth that was happening. So it's very important for sometimes to think about from a business perspective. That was one that I would say went wrong. From a technology perspective, I have seen like where you go and misread that, is this the right tech to bank on, right? And then over time that tech kind of becomes less popular or less prominent in the industry. So those kind of several examples I have, like choosing the right programming language if you think, right, oh, this is going to be highly optimal, and then you find that there is a different language, programming language, that makes it much better to do. It's just all over the map, right? I've made a lot of such decisions.
Yeah, and just in those few there, you mentioned sort of business challenges, technology challenges, market challenges. But, you know, I think some of the more interesting ones also come around intent, where you end up with these sort of intent of transition. Because you told me a really interesting story last time about your expectation to unify a set of business units when actually the investors represented were trying to do almost exactly the opposite. And I thought that was really a good indication of sort of, you know, transitions going wrong right from the very beginning. Can you just tell us a little bit about that story so we can talk about that more, some of the details of it, because the background to it is fascinating, number one. And number two, I think some of the actual decisions in that are very interesting.
Oh, yeah. So it was a time when I was at Citrix, right? So Citrix was formed by doing a bunch of acquisitions of companies and a lot of homegrown tech along with it, right? It's a big company. The reason all these acquisitions happened was because there was a need that was felt by vision from the organization that industry needs all these things put together. Right, in a very cohesive way. And it wasn't working out well because just like they were large companies and they had their own paths to go forward. So the decision was to create an organization that would be sitting on top and building the cohesive story as such, right? The unified workspace as such, which include networking stuff like Netscalers, which was GoToMeeting, which had hypervisors built into it, mobile device management, the entire story. Like, this is the place to go, right? The unified vision. And I was the lead architect for that solution and then working on that story. And it was its own set of challenges because there were GM-based business units and you go talk to a GM and convince them to go ahead and build a feature or invest some resources because the other product will benefit and long-term the company will benefit. It's harder than their micro-focus on, hey, my business should flourish kind of a thing. But still, we were going through those challenges. But given that where the stuff was going on, we had some activist investors who came on board who felt that, you know, there is a lot more value in it to be derived in the short term from breaking it and putting it into parts and rather.
And just to put this into perspective, how aware were you of these sort of machinations and the activist investors joining the cap table? At what point did you sort of begin to get the idea that this was even happening?
Oh, yeah, you could sense that. Actually, what happens is sometimes you would see these conflicts happening at the board and the C team, right, between them, right? And that's what starts to translate down into the decision-making and seeing that that's changing. And you start to see you would see as if there is a pivot kind of a thing happening, but without a full commitment behind it, right? So that's one of the lessons that I've always learned. In fact, hiring people is like disagree and commit is very important to show that, right? If you disagree and commit, if you don't commit well, right, it kind of shows up in the organization. Those are kind of signals that you start seeing happening out there. And after a time, things start to become very public also in big companies, right? It's very hard to hide these kind of...
Absolutely. And it's something that I've seen across my, you know, decades of experience. It's like a sort of pendulum effect that goes, you know, fully integrated to fully modular and back again over time. And sort of the pendulum never quite fully hits one end before there's a force trying to pull it back in the other direction. And was it just a case of reaching towards the end of one of those transitions? Or was it something sort of, you know, externally motivated, you know, as you experienced it at the time?
Yeah, so these pendulum shifts are, so a few things always come into play, right? Some, you have to get a vision right, but you have to get the timing right as well. Things that are built ahead of time are also a big failure than things that are built late, right? So that's where some people, you know, talk in the industry about be a fast follower or like second to the market, never try to be the first to the market. Your probability of success is higher as long as you're the fast follower kind of a thing, right? If you just look from a probability of success perspective. So so some of it could have been that, you know, the market wasn't fully ready for those things. Plus what happens is you just look at some of those things as technology and the market needs, but you also need to understand what your sales motions are and how do you sell in the market. And unless everything is aligned well, like how you're marketing yourself, how you're selling your product, what your customers are expecting from you, and what you are envisioning where the industry is going, unless they all align together well, these integration stories can go very wrong. They're very hard to get them together well, right? So one of the things, like as part of the integration story, I'll give you an example. At Citrix, what we were doing was we made things, it used to take like 6-8 months to do a proof of concept of putting our products together, right? So very first problem, we said, okay, let's attack that problem. We took it to our resellers and we had our annual event and we were showing it to our resellers. And the moment we showed up, it was like an aha moment for me. Everybody in the room got up and started walking out. We had this cool product, which was like, it takes you 6-8 months to create a POC. And here you can create a POC in 15 minutes, an hour kind of a thing, right? We have done this innovation. We bring it out. Everybody starts walking out and like upset. We don't like this. This is a bad, like, okay, hold on. What's going on? They say, you are killing our livelihood. A lot of times these customers, these are paid POCs. We do these paid POCs. It takes us 6 to 8 to 9 months to build these POCs. And whether, regardless of whether customer buys Citrix or VMware, we don't care. We get money. So now you're making this easier, the POC. And the whole thing was, hey, think about this. You can get through the POC product faster and you can get to revenue faster, which will be higher revenue for you, which they knew it happens. But there was one certain stream of revenue, which they felt was they needed to protect each and every revenue stream, right? So what you have to think about is, are you partnering with the right people in that case, right? What we had to do is we had to find partners who are more believing in the value of selling the product versus selling the POCs, which may not return into any benefit to the company as such, right?
Yeah. So having misaligned values, misaligned intent is where you end up going wrong very early on then.
So great tech, right thing for the customer, right? Right thing from a market where the market was going towards, ease of use and simplification, but not having the right channels to work with, right? That's from a sales perspective, right? So that was one thing that was definitely one of the learnings from there, from a panel of swing perspective and how to manage it. The other thing was not everything fits together in the integration story. Don't try to bring in everything that's there, right? And something may not be a part of a good fit, right? And with that one, we quickly recognized and we took care, like the go-to meeting aspect of it was not fitting in the story well for us. Well, unless you're trying to go and compete with the Microsofts and then the later on Google's kind of the word about in that space, right? For us, it was just from our perspective, it was a distraction. So we decided to spin that out. And that was the right decision for us to do that one, because it allowed us to focus over time. So those are like some of the few, at least high level, I would say, learnings. But yeah, that was a place where at the end it was like, you know, I'm trying to unify and then people with money in their pockets are wanting to decide, right? So somebody's got to back off and guess the guy who has no money in their pocket or less money in the pocket is the one who's left. Knowing your investors, knowing their intent is and being aligned to that is very important as well.
Yeah. Alignment is always very important, absolutely. And talking about transitions and alignment, I mean, one of the things that that I also saw you do is building a team from 0 to 100, over 100. It's an amazing journey to go on. I've been part of that journey once or twice. But then having to come back from there to 70-odd at some point in the future, I mean, what happened on the way down? What do you think you sort of learned on that sort of journey back from 100 to 70? Because it's one of those things where I find that different people take away different things from it. And it's also, I think, one of those things that's got really relevant in the market at the moment is people have got lots of thoughts of either saving money or flatlining teams. But it's a similar kind of thinking at the moment, isn't it?
Yeah. I think that was one of the first ones that I had to go through, and I learned a lot from that one. And I think that has helped me also improve. Like, and that kind of brings into some of those things which I say is that partner very closely with your C team, especially your CFO, has been a good learning for me over time, right? Basically, depending upon where you are, if you're lower in the organization, finance team, if you're a C member, make sure you see up when you're aligned. You know what they're trying to do, what their pain points are, anticipating there, right? So that's also like one of the things. You need to anticipate things, but not be reactive as such, right? If you're just reacting versus responding to a situation, but that you can only do if you have a high level of anticipation. But for me, the few things to learn was it's as important as making sure when we start talking about, oh, we got to do some kind of a reduction, we start thinking about what's the message we want to send to the people who are staying back. It's equally important to think about what's the message and how you are going to be treating the people who will be rather moving on from the organization, right? Because people who stay back will also take note of that action as well, which is very obvious, right? Once you say it, it feels like very obvious. But take time to think of them as people. Go through those, see where you can help them to land, if possible, and looking at the market conditions. Sometimes you're doing in a great market condition, like the moment you ask people to leave and they will go and find 5 offers, right? Fine. You have to think of it differently versus when you see that, you know, it's a tough market. And a lot of times these things you end up doing in tough market, and the one I had to do was in a tough market. So I tried to sit down with almost and go through the story of each and every individual person to see, is there something we can help them? Do you think they will have trouble finding stuff, depending on the geo, because it was a multi-geo thing, right?
Right.
So in that particular geo, in that location, right, can you help them somehow? And that goes a long way, because you build friendships also because of that, or you build a lot of moral capital in the company and the people.
Yeah, it comes back to never being lazy with the people. Again, it's amazing how that sort of reinforces and rings true. Then I completely agree with your approach there.
What I said was anticipate and then partner with the CEO, CFO kind of is important, because what happens is if you have a good partnership, you can understand the worries that are coming from them, right? And is otherwise what happens is if you're not, there will be decisions made for you and it will come down to you as numbers, either as headcount or something to cut, as opposed to a partnership to talk about what's going on. If you anticipate those things, you can slow down hiring, you can think about where else can I find ways to cut expenses, as opposed to always being everything translating down to people and numbers there.
Yeah, so you sort of retain a sense of agency and control if you are partnering with the finance team, the CFO. And I think that comes back to the language of leadership is very often financial in nature, as opposed to technical or people-oriented. And again, the more you speak that language, the more comfortable you're going to be in those conversations, whether it's with the CFO, the CEO, or indeed the rest of the leadership team. Does that match your sort of experience on that journey too?
Oh, absolutely. Some courses that I did as part of my engineering program management, which were on the tech folk and finance and then marketing, have been very important and helpful. I think people should, in the tech roles, should not be thinking about, I'm a techie, I should be like, that's what I'm expected to do. No, you are the translation from the tech team to the other teams, right? Whether it's a marketing team, whether it's a sales team, whether it's the finance team. So you need to speak their language to translate that, and especially with the finance people, you need to understand that. Unless if you don't understand the numbers well, how those numbers are made for the organization, you will fail yourself as well as the team. And remember, as a CTO, you're responsible more for the team than yourself, right? I think your success is important for the team's success, and you have to succeed for the sake of the team. And to do that, you have to make sure you understand the financial speak as well. Yes.
In amongst all of those, you know, wonderful transitions and understanding the language of others and so on, somewhere in all of that, the way you choose what you do next clearly underwent a transition that changed in its own way as well. I mean, tell us about some of those experiences where you had figured out some of the challenges, you'd figured out some of the bits and pieces, you understood how to focus on the people, and things went well. Some of the kind of things you've learned from embedded in your way of working and you now repeat a lot.
So one of the things is talk to a lot of people, first of all, right? You have to take time to talk to people. You have to know your team. You are not supposed to be the smartest person in the room. Like, contrary to a lot of people think that a CTO is the smartest person in the room. No, you're not the smartest person. You are the one who's orchestrating the smartest people in the organization, as opposed to you being the... The moment you become the smartest person in the room, I think that organization has a people problem, because that means that everybody's waiting for the some commandments to come down from top, right? And say, this is what you do, this is how it will be. No, you're the one who are helping them think and become thinkers than doers. So, and that's why I keep saying that as an organization, you have to have a lot more thinkers now, especially now in the day of age of, can't say the word AI without any podcast, we can't do it or we any talk, but where like a lot of other things happening, thinking is a very important skill to bring to the table and at every level. So once you're listening to people, you're catching those signals, right? So there you have the thinkers and you are promoting them. You will find things that need to be taken care of. Don't delay them, right? Take the problem by the horn and go and attack it, right? So that's one of the things that I've learned, that, you know, don't, if somebody comes and tells you, this has been something there, and maybe as if you're like a second, third, fourth CTO in a company, right? It's then, nobody ever took action. Pay attention to those problems, right? And see, because once you pay attention to those problems, you also build lot more confidence with the team that, you know, the tough problems, the harder problems are not being set aside, but being taken right ahead of. Apart from that, right, you know, you know your strengths and what is missing. You have to round yourself up, right? So translate, every problem is a new problem. It's rare that you'll say, okay, I just know this thing and I'll keep going to focus on this as a CTO. Your technologies will change. If I look back into my career, I started in writing firmware software, right? And had good debates with my hardware engineer sometimes on like where the problem lies kind of a thing. But from there to where I'm right now, these are all things have changed, right? So you have to be a constant learner, but learn as a CTO, think about the technologies and how you are relating and putting them together in the next role. Look out for the transitions. Look for what I call them as inflection points. There are a bunch of inflection points that come to the industry, right? We are going through obviously a big one right now. Yeah, internet was an inflection point, right? If you even think about on the telecom field, going from trying to just have circuits for voice, and then an inflection was, can I send voice on those circuits? To versus can I send data packets on those voice circuits, to the reverse of it, where I was now everything was data and voice was rather a packet on the data, right? All those were big transition points that we don't realize brought us to where we are. But look out for those and see how you're going to respond. Constantly thinking about, hey, what can go wrong? Like I call it as a pre-mortem. You have to be running
pre-mortem. Yeah,
it's very important. But yeah.
So it's one of those things where those big inflection points or big transitions are kind of quite easy to see in hindsight. What sort of experience do you have around learning how to see one as it comes up? Because, I mean, all of us can now point out, you know, okay, look, the advent of LLMs was a big turning point. The introduction of the mobile phone on the industry, obviously a big turning point. But of the stuff that's happening now and the things that's ongoing, how do you use your experience to look at that and go, okay, well, there's a turning point coming up over there. We need to keep an eye on that.
Yeah, so it's more like I would say is keep listening to the knocks that's coming on your foundation, right? And if you see those knocks coming, be wary of them and try to imagine where they can go towards, right? It is like when I say, take a very simple problem, even from a capacity problem, right? If you have, this road is having congestion, let me make from a one lane into a two lane road, but that should not be the way you think about the problem. You have to think about, okay, by the time I build it, right? And then when do I have to rebuild again? So should I rather go back and rebuild for that as opposed to treating that kind of a problem? But so anticipation, same thing I say in the software architecture, the CTO or even others, like if you have to re-architect, that means you did not think through and architect the product well in advance. But those small knocks that are coming from different directions, pay very special attention to them. Try to see, can imagine as to see where can they go. And small, always think like if you are a startup, how would I come in and go ahead and get into this space, right? People keep talking about nowadays, I've heard this, you know, like 4 or 5 years ago, people are making statements like, you know, it's very hard to do innovation. It's very hard to build a startup now. The big companies are kind of just taking away everything, right? And even to get something attention. But guess who came and really disrupted Anthropic and OpenAI? They're startups, right? They will not be companies, right? So any other. So there's always room for startups to come and yeah. Do. So keep an eye, go talk to people in the industry, be listening, seeing what trends are. Don't just be inward focused. And that's where you will find. And obviously your intuition over time will help you to catch some signals. Not everything should become a cry wolf, right? But identifying the right wolves is also a skill and talent that you will own. And you'll make mistakes, right? It's not. So don't be afraid to make mistakes. But take your, that's where you need to spend a lot more time is to thinking about what are the shifts that are happening or could happen, right? And if you can get onto them, it's hard, I understand, right? When you have a running business, a lot of times you are into a running business that is either mildly or moderately successful, right? And you're just trying to grow that. And then, oh my God, is there something else? But that's very important, right? It's if you don't think about them constantly, you will get into trouble. So I think it's just more like looking out and being watchful in the industry. That's what it is, right? It goes back to anticipating the questions that are going to come and the opportunities that are going to come for you is also very important.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, I think because you mentioned there about using your gut, training your instincts, and I think one of the things that that is the driver for that for me. I'm coaching 20 or 30 CTOs at any one point in time. And one of the biggest things the last 18 months or so has been fear. It's been fear about what's coming next, not just for engineers, but for leaders as well. And one of the things that you mentioned to me previously is that fear is usually a signal that you're not taking the right actions. So mm-hmm. how do you sort of look at that more generally?
I would say fear is one thing that if you create a fear in your head about something, chances it will become true. That's one thing I always tell people, right? So other day I was having a conversation in my organization and they had something that they were going to find a replacement vendor. And I said, you know, instead of finding a replacement cheaper vendor for the work that we are doing, why don't you think ahead and think about 3-4 years from now? Where do you think it will go? Why don't you make a decision thinking about the future as opposed to, oh, I've got a vendor, I can find a more cost-effective vendor. So the response in that case was, you know, oh, no, we're a little bit scared about all this AI and everything. We don't want to make those kind of decisions, right? And so we are scared whether our job will be safe or else or not. So, and I said, you know, if you're scared about your job will go away. That means yeah. you're not really thinking it through, right? So think it through. So that's in general what I say about fear. Like if you think about, let me sit and wait for it, it will be late by the time you wait and come out of it. So take it head on, right? Think about why is the fear happening? Keep asking the question of why till you run out of whys. And you will find one of your answers out there. But right now, actually, it's a very exciting time, I would say. AI has opened up so many frontiers for you. The other thing I say is, especially for leaders who have been in the time to get to a C-level position, don't make decisions for short-term financial reasons, right? Because those sometimes we kind of make... Unless you have a very high probability of making a jackpot of money, but it's more like don't try to play safe in that case is what my point was, right? Go take risks out there and you will be happier. If you are, as a C leader, if you are afraid, if you are having a fear, that fear will translate into and reflect in your behavior and work and in the organization and actually create an organization of fear. Right. So that's very important for you to take those fears head on and not be afraid to look for the right things in the industry. Right. Most importantly, look for the people you're going to work with. Right. That's very important.
I've heard that from a number of people. Yeah. Go work with people who you enjoy working with and the fear will dissipate. Work with people who you're afraid of working with and the fear will multiply. Mm-hmm. It's very interesting how you phrase it like that. And I also think it's one of those things whereby if you make decisions in the context of fear, you tend to be more safe, and safe tends to be short-term because safe tends to be what the market needs rather than where the industry is going or where technology is heading. So it's very interesting that those two correlate, probably without really intending to in terms of that. And I'm really conscious of making sure that we can distill all of this wonderful experience that you've got, these great stories, into something that our listeners can take away and use. Now, you gave me... before the show, an acronym, which I'd just like to walk through with you. So first of all, the acronym is SHAPE, SHAPE. But can you sort of take us through that one at a time? So let's start off with S.
Yeah, before I started the acronym, I don't know. I've been an acronym person from very early age. I remember like when it was sixth grade geography and I had to remember this was no tech, right? This was computers. I didn't even know what computers were back then, right? In sixth grade. I had to learn about the Earth's crust and what minerals are famed are constituting that, right? Instead of trying to remember the minerals, I create an acronym out of it. And so I can still tell you all the 8 minerals that form the Earth's crust. So that's why I try to give acronyms to it. So the shape, like starting with S, right? S about sectioning your time, right? So as a knowing your team is the most important. So section a good amount of time in your week or whichever way you want to plan your time, right, as a C leader, is to know your team well and build a tribe around it. So sectioning time is the first S about for knowing and building a tribe.
So is there another way of putting that rather than sectioning? Nobody may be familiar with that, but set aside time for yeah. mm-hmm. working with your people. Now, you use the word there, tribe. Very interesting word to use. It's, you know, there's only a few organizations I've really heard use that as a way to describe people. Why did you pick that word in particular, Anu?
The tribe is where because you will watch each other's back. You will work with the motivation for a common goal. And that's very important to build, right? I treat So building software as a sports, as a game, right? So if the team does not have that tribe feeling, right, they will never be able to passionately go and, okay, oh, this person is having trouble, let me go help them or cover for them or fill in for them, as opposed to, no, that's their work, I don't care, I did my work good, right? That's why. So building that tribe feeling is very important. Because
around a common intent. Got it, right. So H then was the next one.
Yes. So that's hiring, right? So first of all, you have to be always be hiring, right? That's one thing, right? You're always recruiting, always hiring. But I say is what kind of people you're hiring. In fact, I have a acronym for hiring the people which I have created called HIRED, right? And if you follow that HIRED acronym, then you will get to be a part of the team that I am in, right? But one of the most important thing is always don't be scared of people who are asking tough questions, so hire them, right? In fact, they are the right people to help you because they are your sounding boards in a critical way. So enable that critical thinking, the conflicting opinions in the organization, but also bring in some people who love to ask questions, right?
So when you say people who are asking hard questions, you're not necessarily talking there about people who ask difficult things of other people, but people who are asking the questions that are not necessarily being asked by others that force the thinking through and answer. Is that where you're coming from there?
Yes, that exactly. Right. So it's more about building and thinking. It's not like coming and putting you in a tough spot kind of a thing in a public meeting or something.
So it's not the quiz master. It's just somebody who is going to help you think through the areas where perhaps nobody else is looking at yet.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Got it. So that takes us on to A then.
A is, for me, is anticipation. And I think I put it in a different place. Like in my HIRED acronym, it comes as a respond versus react kind of a thing, but it's more like anticipation in the SHAPE acronym, which is you have to always be look out for challenges and opportunities, right? So if you're trying to always anticipate those, you will be a lot more prepared if they become true, right? So you, it's not that everything will be true, but you're trying to anticipate those. So be in that sense, that's what the anticipate as a CTO. Your job is to be and trying to anticipate all the things that are happening and see which ones are threats, which ones are opportunities, or even if they're threats, how can you convert them into opportunities for yourself?
Now that touches on something that was very interesting. I wanted to ask you about it because you put problems and opportunities, and there are those people who see them as two separate things, and those people who see one as the seed for the other, which you just touched on. I was hoping you would, because it's one of those points that I find so important. If you can look at a problem and see the opportunity in the middle of it, or see an opportunity and see the problem behind it, I think you then begin to realize that the two very often either masquerading one as the other or masking one another.
Oh, yeah. It's very important, right? And there are a bunch of examples you can go and even the bunch of thinkers and philosophers have written books on it, right? But it's like you can say glass empty, half full kind of a perspective even on things, right? But I would say almost even could argue that behind every problem, there is an opportunity. But then there is an opportunity cost about changing. It's basically trying to track or try to follow or chase that problem down, right? So build into that. And sometimes the problem does indeed stay back as a problem. But don't always think of, oh, there's a problem. Let me just think of it as a problem. That's the main point I always say, right? Yeah.
So anticipation. Excellent. So then P. P was the next one.
Yeah, the P is like, as a CTO member, don't think that you're a technologist as a CTO, that you're just kind of focused internally, right? Partnering rest with the C team is very important. And that's where knowing their language to speak will help you translate. Because if I go there and I'll talk about, okay, how does stack trace work on the C language to my CRO, I'm sure I'll not be sitting there for long with him, right, and having an engaged conversation. So take your tech, translate it, but speak the language of the person that you're talking and build relationships. That's the most important, because that will give you also the way to help you anticipate things, right? If you can, because if you're partnering closely with CRO, you're not just waiting for, oh, there's one feature missing in that would close the sale, but you're rather trying to hear about signals of what else are the customers asking for and maybe help you build a better product even, right? Or what kind of things are keeping them up, right? Like, is it pricing? Is it packaging, right? And those kind of things, you will figure those out and then you'll translate into tech. If you're making a decision, say, you know, I was rather on a seat-based license and need to move to consumption-based license, but nobody's asked for it yet. But if you keep hearing it, you're architecting the product. You say, hey, let's make sure if we have to ever move to a consumption-based pricing, our architecture supports it. So that's why if you are anticipated in those areas, you are architecting for future as opposed to architecting for the present problems. But for that also, the partnership is very important, but especially your as I said, your CFO, and obviously it does not go without saying your CEO, obviously you have to partner closely anyways with, but if you had to pick only one person, say, where do I spend a lot more time with partnering is, because you don't realize as a CTO, you are sitting on so many things that the finance team can use and be helpful with, right? The technology that you build can help maybe even reduce the cost of support operations, supporting teams, right? So customer support team, that the quality of the product that you're building. You're sitting on a CapEx budget, an OpEx budget, the biggest, most likely the biggest headcount, if not the biggest headcount in your organization, right?
Certainly, so, one of the most expensive usually as well.
Yes, yeah. So, and in you're dealing with a lot more vendors, you can and look into even help them on, hey, what kind of payment terms are going to help, like, in some cases, you're more sitting on a cash-rich company. Do you want a better deal? And those things you can help negotiate even if you are and build that trust and partnership. Your decision-making gets very faster, actually. Once you're, you know that you have built that good trust relation with the CFO, you, even if you ask for something and say, you know, trust me, I'll take care of it in the next quarter. I need a bump in expense this quarter. And they know that you understand and you will do it, right? Because that's important. So that's why... In my shape, acronym P is one of the very important ones out there. Yeah.
And I love the fact you mentioned the whole of the business, but especially the CFO, because I think so many CTOs, chief technology officers, has this impression that the most important person to partner with is the CEO, driving the company, keeping the company afloat, responsible for making sure that the ship stays level and ongoing. But I love your approach of tackling it from the finance perspective, because there's an awful, as you say, there's an awful lot of levers on the financial side of the business. One of the things I find that a lot of CTOs aren't as aware of, you just mentioned CapEx and OpEx are two different budgets. And because of the way that we're structured in engineering, we can often help the CFO to move values from one side to the other, depending on what the balance sheet and the cash flow requires. But if you don't understand the language of finance, if you don't partner with your CFO, you can't give the business access to those tools easily. So I think it's a really great example of how you can make a significant difference to the business. I love that partnership one.
Yeah. And a lot of these, if you see, they kind of play together. Like as you rightly pointed out on the CFO one, like anticipation and partnership, right? If I combine them together, I'll give an example, right? So there was a time I was in a company where you could, there was a quarterly budget for your CapEx expense, right? And obviously CapEx can not just be hardware, but software also. And there was a, buying the infrastructure hardware is always prioritized. But a lot of times, towards the end of the quarter, you would come into a problem where they thought that this was going to be in this quarter and now it's going to shift out in the next quarter. And there is a budget that is, in some sense, use it or lose it kind of a thing. I used to anticipate and say, if this happens, am I ready to grab onto that budget? Now, I'm not going to buy toys for myself, but write software for the organization. But there, the whole thing was, have I done all the process of going through and getting it vetted through legal, through security audits, my vendor management system? Are they onboarded? Because a lot of these, because they'll try to keep pushing till the last date, right? And see if I can fit in. But if not, then they'll say, oh, there is a budget that's available. Anybody wants to take it? I'll say, yes, I'm ready. Oh, you really? Yeah. I said, just go through. Everything is ready if you have it, right? So it helped me be able to utilize some of those budgets because I was partnering with the right people. I was anticipating stuff, right? So that those are things I would say is very important to think about. And that helps your organization. It was money lost for the organization if I had not done it, in a public company especially, right?
Yeah, that's a missed opportunity if you don't take it. So that preparation and partnership, absolutely critical to being able to do that. But also that sort of takes us onto E, which I think is critical and important. And it's almost kind of obvious, but you've just given the greatest setup to it. So tell us about E.
Yeah. E is, I would say it's, you can call it in different ways, but it's about evolve, right? You should always be thinking about continuous evolution, right? Do not stay constant where you are. And if there is one thing that one idea, one thing that you want to be married to, if you want, that is like change is the constant. And they should have a very continuous process of evolution out there, right? Both in your career, both about your learning as an individual, as a team, as an organization, right? Most successful organizations are those who have evolved with with time and change what they were selling and what their primary thing is. If you look at a lot of the big companies and where they're making money now versus where they're making 10 years ago, if you're stuck in just trying to protect the core of the business, you will definitely get obsolete. So adopt or perish kind of a thing, or evolve or perish is what I would say rather. So that's the E in the shape, which is kind of seems obvious, but I always put it out there because, you know, a lot of tech companies come and go. If you think about it, like if you think about the GPS, how much niche of what's happening to the GPSs of the industry, like everybody had a Garmin on them and multiple Garmins, right? Even like if I had like three at one point of time, one for each car, and one when I was traveling, I need to use one, right? So put it in the rental car, sorry, because not every rental car had it. From there to like going to, okay, no GPS phone, just put the phone in, plug it in, it kind of. So this happens to almost like every industry that you have to think about evolution and where it's going towards. And a lot of examples, right? You can go, who are the car manufacturers, who are the wagon manufacturers? I was very interesting. I was at one of the museums here recently, and I saw that the initial cars that they made were actually almost look like wagons, because they were trying to think about how does, like, I'm replacing a horse, but the people are kind of sitting in the wagon. So the whole concept was you're creating an electric wagon kind of a thing, right? From there to so that's where you have to more think about where the future is versus just trying to tweak it out there, right?
The change is constant, and to keep evolving with it to match the evolution, absolutely critical. I think it's a great summary. So, basically, this is driving your career in tech leadership. It's, so we had S, so section time to know your team and build a tribe. H, for hire people who ask the tough questions. A, for anticipating challenges and opportunities. P, for partnering closely with your the rest of your executive team, but particularly with your CFO. And then E, for evolve and adapt. And I think your entire experience and background teaches us a lot about keeping up with the evolution, the changes everywhere, from going from those early oscilloscope stories all the way through to the modern era with AI changing things as rapidly as it is doing at the moment.
Yes, so you put it very well, Adam. I think you put it better than how I would put it out there. But yeah, that's the in short the philosophy with which I operate as a CTO, and would love to hear comments from others too on that and see what they think about it. But shape is what shapes my career, and I hope it can shape others' careers too.
Oh, what a wonderful sentiment. And for those people who would like to carry on the conversation, what's the best way of them getting in touch with you?
I'm quite active on LinkedIn, so that's a good place for me to connect with people and chat and have conversations out there. That's where I typically start a lot of conversations and work. That I think with so many stuff out there, I try to focus on one and then try to hone in on that as a way to communicate, right?
Right. Well, we'll put the link to that in the comments to the episode so people can get in touch with you. And one of the last questions I love to ask every guest on the show is, for those people who are just getting into the leadership industry and technology, you know, if you were to give yourself one tip to give to a CTO just coming into the role right now, what would you say that one is?
If there is one tip, I would say is think about the S. Start with that S, which was set team. So you, one thing you have to remember is you're transitioning into a role where you're kind of standing more isolated and exposed. There is nobody else who's going to defend your work except for you, right? And so that's a big transition that you're making. You are the adult in the room. You are from a tech perspective, right? So make sure you build those partnerships, whether it's knowing your own people, whether it's knowing your peer teams. And if you're taking a role, make sure you take your time to know everybody on that team, at least in your peer relationship. Don't miss out on anybody. If somebody says, oh, we did three interviews, you're good to be coming, and there's two more people on that team, ask them that I want to talk to them too, right? So that you're partnered with them. So that's very important, is knowing the people. That's the most important thing. And knowing that you're exposed, you're on the top. You're responsible for people, but you are the person.
True to the playbook from beginning to end. Anup, thanks very much. It's been wonderful to talk to you.
All right. Well, thank you, Adam. It was a pleasure talking to you. Have a good rest of your day.
Thank you for listening to the whole episode. I appreciate your time. So just before you go, I'd like to ask you for a favor in return for putting together this episode of the CTO Playbook for you. Please share the episode with just one person who will appreciate it. Wherever you're listening, whether that is Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, or another platform, sharing the episode will help more CTOs find the podcast and enable me to create more great content. Remember that you can find more information on thecetoplaybook.com. Thank you for listening, and I'll see you on the next episode of the CTO Playbook.